Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, presented by Sling. It is late slash early. We have so much to talk about. Ari Wasserman just got home. He watched a top of the upright doink live and in person.
First time I've ever seen that, Andy.
I don't think I've ever seen that either. I've seen it hit the upright and bounce in.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it go over the top, and then they debate whether you call that good or no good. But I've never seen it hit the very top. And the TV angle. This is Texas A&M, Arkansas, by the way. This is Arkansas's potential game winning kick. The TV angle made it look like it hit the top, and there was a chance it could bounce in, but then it just fell in front.
So let me ask you this: shouldn't the top of the upright be like hitting the pylon?
No, because if you hit the upright with the ball, let's say the uprights extend forever. If you hit the upright with the ball, it bounces off the upright.
I wonder if we could get like a shot from NASA. If like the ball at any point after the doink, like the nose of the football went over the bar and down.
It was incredible.
It's a terrible way to lose the game.
But it wasn't the worst way to lose a game on a kick that happened Saturday.
It wasn't
even the craziest part.
Andy, I don't know where we're going to begin on this Saturday. I was watching the games all day today. I was at the game, keeping up with other games. I got to say, though, before we start, it was a big day for the Wasserman brand, I think. We got USC getting through a big test, Iowa overhitting. Like, everything came up Wasserman today.
Well, USC didn't cover.
All I'm concerned with is that they stay undefeated. You know, they didn't cover.
Let's talk about USC, because that is the reason we are up this late, is we're waiting for USC and Oregon State to figure out who's going to win that game. And it was a slog. USC was just struggling to score on the Beavers. Very good throw by Caleb Williams to Jordan Addison at the end, the whole shot, as it were, to win the game. And USC's defense did a good job creating turnovers. That's the one thing that USC has going for it that travels. They don't commit turnovers on offense. They make turnovers on defense. And that is really something to hang your hat on. Now, if they play like that against some of the better teams in the Pac-12, they are going to lose. Although I would argue that maybe Oregon State's one of the better teams in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I think that this team clearly looked human, and you know, I didn't watch most of it, or you know, that much of it at all until the end. And listen, there's two ways of looking at it. One, it's just USC didn't cover. Their offense looked like crap most of the game, and Oregon State did a good job of controlling the game at home, right? But the other way to look at it is, if you would have asked USC beat writer Antonio Morales and anybody else, they would have said that this is the biggest test of the early season. You know, and I know in 3 weeks they have to go to Utah, and I think that's probably the biggest test of the actual season. But getting through this with a win and winning in a way that isn't the patented way that Oklahoma won games, you know, I think is a pretty good win for them. Now, you know, I know that there's a long way to go, and we've been joking a lot about whether they're going to make the playoff or not. But you know, sometimes this season and this sport just about advancing and surviving, and I'm not sure that USC teams under the Clay Helton era would have won that game. So,
the fact that they
escaped that game and, you know, get to go next week at home against Arizona State, it gives them 2 weeks until Washington State to clean some stuff up. And, you know, whenever you have talented players like Addison and Williams running the show there, you have a shot to have a pretty dynamic offense. So, you know, if I'm a USC fan, I'm probably not thrilled, but I'm relieved that they got through this. And, you know, it looks like they'll be able to at least make it to mid-October as an undefeated team. And, you know, that's going to be a fun game at Utah on October 15th.
Yeah, I'm. Let's put it this way: I'm still not going to my Venmo account yet.
I think that I lost a little of my the zoom and my step on that one. You know, it just because everybody was saying that, you know, Oregon State's the play. All the money's going on Oregon State. It did, and I still in my you know chest thought that there was a chance that this USC team wasn't being respected the way the Oklahoma teams would have been under Riley, because I've been applying the Riley-ness of USC to this team. Mm-hmm. And I think what we found out tonight is that this team probably is more USC to get out of its system before it becomes Oklahoma.
Right. And, right. You Lincoln know, Riley took one. Over a much better situation at Oklahoma than he took over at USC.
That's right.
Even though he brought the handpicked quarterback and all of that. I mean, at Oklahoma, it was rolling. They had Baker Mayfield. You know, the infrastructure had been in place forever.
Maybe it's naive just to think that it was just going to happen immediately.
Yeah, look, the way they won tonight was excellent, because that's a tough place to play. You've been hearing me sing the praises of Jonathan Smith on this podcast for a while now. Oregon State is a tough team. They get after you. They hit you. They're physical up front.
Tough road trip, too, all of a sudden, you know.
Exactly the type of team that we've said old USC would have struggled with. So you're right. I think you're right. They have not gotten all of that out of their system, because it's still, even though they flipped the roster, mostly those players. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the place Lincoln Riley left, because Chris Klieman had Lincoln Riley's number when Lincoln Riley coached at Oklahoma, and apparently he also has Brent Venables' number.
Yeah,
coaching at Oklahoma. K-State loses to Tulane and goes to Norman and wins. Three wins against Oklahoma in four seasons. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. This conference is just bonkers always, you know. And I'm sure we'll get to Texas, too, because
they
lost. You know, the fact of the matter is that this is one of the toughest conferences, I think, or the toughest Power 5 conference to peg. In the country. And, you know, what makes this is the exact example of why transitive property is useless.
Yes.
You know, you can't use it, because a team can lose to Tulane one week and then come out and beat Oklahoma on the road the next. And, you know, it wasn't all that surprising to me. So, you know, Oklahoma to me is still a team that's in building too. You know, I think it's probably a fair thing to say that you probably think about Oklahoma in a similar fashion that you think about USC. New coach, talented roster, but, you know, not quite what they have been, both, you know, in the bad ways that USC were, and maybe not the great ways that Oklahoma was. So, you know, I still think that I've got great confidence in both of those coaches to get it under the, you know, under the direction that they hope to get it to in a few years. But, you know, I do think that both of these teams are in transitions in different ways, and I think it was kind of interesting to see how it manifested in both of these games today.
It was very interesting, and I think obviously the biggest subplot of that Oklahoma game was Adrian Martinez. Remember, he started for Nebraska against them last year, and actually Nebraska played them really tough last season.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is a guy who was basically blamed for a lot of the stuff at Nebraska. I'd say this year it doesn't feel like that was much of his fault, and you know, Scott Frost has already been fired. But
this is kind of his MO too, right? One week, right. Turnovers everywhere, pull your hair out. I can't watch this guy anymore. And then the next, he rushes for 148 yards and four touchdowns.
Yeah, I'll give you the stat line. So the Tulane game, he 21 of 31 for 150 yards passing, 4.8 yards per attempt.
Yep.
And then rushing in the Tulane game, 13 carries for 59 yards, no touchdowns. Against Kansas State, he scored four touchdowns on the ground. He threw for 234 and a touchdown. He ran for 148 on 21 carries. I mean, he was just unstoppable.
Yeah, you know, again, it's like Jekyll and Hyde, right? And that's just kind of how he's always been. Like, I mean, Adrian Martinez, if you remember him as a freshman, it was like, holy crap, this guy's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that it kind of stopped progressing the way that you would have hoped with the flashes of talent that you saw from him early in his career, you know, it's kind of a shame. But then at the same time, too, it's like he's already at this point in his career and year, what is it, five now? Is this his fifth year?
Yeah, this is his fifth year.
Or his 20th.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, here he is back again. So, you know, it's a tough thing for Oklahoma probably to to accept that, you know, you lose a tough game like this, but you know, these spreads are all under 7 points, right? This was a 5.5 point spread, I think.
Yeah.
It's just like this conference is really, really hard to peg.
Well, let's stay in the Big 12 because we got a couple things going on there. Kansas did not play a Big 12 game. They are 1-0 in the Big 12 because they beat West Virginia. But they played Duke, and Duke put up a fight, but Kansas was in control of that game for most of the day. They're 4-0 now.
Are they going to make an appearance in the AP poll?
I think so. I think it's going to happen.
I don't know off the top of my head. You might know this, but when's the last time that happened?
Probably 2009 when they still had Todd Reesing.
Yeah, man.
And they've got Iowa State next week in Lawrence. That's a game they should be able to be competitive in. That's a game they should be able to win.
I mean, are we ready for this Kansas might be pretty good thing? Like, are we there?
I'm so ready for it. I almost feel bad for the Kansas people, though, because, and we've talked about this on the show already, but Lance Leipold did too good of a job too fast, because now they're just going, oh, crap, who's going to steal our coach?
Yeah.
Because everybody in college football knows what a mess was left behind by Les Miles and when Jeff Long was the AD. And they've come in and cleaned all that up. And it's a confident team playing really well. And it's just, it is amazing. But I think we are going to see them in the AP poll. We'll see how long that lasts because, again, Iowa State could beat them.
I pay less than zero attention to the AP poll. Did they get votes last week?
Probably. I have to look.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because I think people may be disappointed to learn that we don't care about the AP poll at all. Like, you guys care about it because it's your team and you'd like to see your team ranked above some other team. Like, I don't care right now. It doesn't mean anything to me. When the playoff rankings start, then yeah, I'll care about that because that actually means something. But none of that stuff actually matters. So the way Kansas is playing, they're fun to watch. I mean, that place was rocking today. They had a sellout crowd.
It'll be a very interesting shift for Kansas when it goes from ha 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 ha, they're 3-0. Game day should have gone there. This is hilarious, to like, oh, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's like, that's the thing that I think that is the next step for that program, because everybody was kind of joking about it.
I'd say go split the next 2 weeks. Split they've got two games. They got Iowa State and TCU the next 2 weeks. Split those games 1-1. I mean, if you win them both, great. But then you'd be undefeated going to the Oklahoma game. But if you split those games.
A team they almost beat last year, by the way.
Yes, exactly. They challenged Oklahoma with Caleb Williams, by the way. And so I'm very excited to see what they become. And yeah, it's Jalen Daniels, great runner, but very efficient passer. Obviously, the run sets up the pass for them. But I've gotten to where I really enjoy watching them. That's one of those teams I'm now seeking out. It's like the anti-Iowa.
Sneaky, but awesome uniforms too, by the way.
Well, I was wondering, like, I was like, okay, you got your sellout crowd. Why are you going full red? And then I realized, oh, because Duke is very blue. And so this actually stands out. It was probably a strategic decision more than a marketing decision.
I really like their helmets too.
Oh yeah, that's a very large Jayhawk.
Yeah, it is.
It reminds me of, to represent
where that program's headed, man.
Kind of like Toucan Sam.
Yeah,
on the Fruit Loops box. So yeah,
now I want Fruit Loops.
Oh,
you ever come back from covering a game at midnight and want Fruit Loops?
Late night cereal is one thing I've cut it out completely, and I miss it a lot.
You can't plug that into the Lose It app, but I will say, and I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a big milk person. I like milk, and I never drink it because it's never in the house because Brit's almond milk, all that. But now that the baby is transitioning from formula to milk, we have like a gallon of whole milk in the fridge.
Oh, yeah.
And part of me just wants to get up off this podcast right now and just chug half of it because I'm like thirsty.
I did switch the family to whole milk because it makes you more full.
It also tastes delicious.
It is unbelievably delicious. I put heavy cream in my coffee.
I mean, the difference between whole milk and 1% and fat-free milk is staggering.
Yeah, yeah. What other product do we pay the same amount for to dilute it?
Yeah, like, I agree.
Light beer, I guess. But yeah, it is... It is amazing that this has happened so quickly at Kansas, because the mess that Lance Leipold inherited was significantly worse than a lot of the messes new coaches inherited in 2021 and or 2020 or 2022. Like, it was bad. And what he's been able to do has been pretty amazing. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're going to move on to another coach in the Big 12 who was in his first year in 2021. Who looked a lot like himself in 2021, today in 2022. And that's Steve Sarkisian. Texas takes a 31-17. Felt like they were very much in control of the game. Felt like Texas Tech couldn't tackle Bijan Robinson. And all of a sudden, everything just stops.
Yeah, I mean, you hate to see what happened with Bijan there.
Yeah,
that was, you know, because he, from what I understand, and I haven't spoken to him since he was in high school, but all I hear about him all the time is that he's the model citizen and the nicest guy in the world. And, you know, his game really backs it up. And to see the best player on the team that the team can't move without, you know, cough the ball up in overtime the way that he did, it's just a tough break, you know.
And it was a great strip, by the way. That was not, it wasn't like he was carrying it in an uncaring manner. He wasn't carrying it like a loaf of bread, like. It was a fantastic strip. And look, sometimes that just happens. I will say, as Texas Tech lined up for that field goal, I was thinking, oh my God, this is the Missouri Auburn game all over again. They're going to miss this and lose. But no, they did not. And they stormed the field. Huge win for Joey McGuire. You know, and especially like longtime Texas high school football coach, Joey McGuire. Zach,
and that's Kittley, the last time they're playing them in their house, probably for a long, long time, if ever.
Right. Unless they go all the way to 2025, which we don't think they will. We think some deal will be struck to get them in the SEC when the new SEC TV deal starts in 2024. So yeah, this would be the last visit to Lubbock.
And I'm going to make this point too. Now that I'm in Texas and I'm starting to get a feel for it, you know, we might joke, "Oh yeah, Texas is back to mediocrity." I saw in the comments, and it's, you know, 2 losses in 4 games. Can't kind of argue with that, but the amount of pride and how much it means to these other schools in the Big 12 to beat Texas is immeasurable.
There was horns down from all the fans in Lubbock, horns down from all the fans in Norman, horns down from A&M fans in Arlington. Like, that's what Texas is in everybody's head, even if they quote unquote stink. Like, they're blowing a lead in Lubbock. Meanwhile, I
mean, people are cheering at the game when
people at the A&M game are throwing horns down when they should be worrying about surviving Arkansas.
Yeah. And that was like right at the beginning of the A&M
game. Arkansas fans were doing it too, though, because they hate them too.
Yeah. There was a loud cry, scream, roar, whatever.
Yeah.
When Texas Tech hit that long field goal at the end of regulation. But Texas miraculously, you know, got down the field really quickly and pushed it to overtime. But people are always locked in on what Texas is doing. And like for Joey McGuire's brand, you know, what he's trying to build there, what's he doing? He's building it with Texas talent in Texas hallways with Texas coaches. Yep. And to beat the team that
Texas is
supposed to be doing it that way, you know, that's a huge notch on your belt, to borrow a term from Wedding Crasher. So,
I'm not going to bail on Sark again. I've said I think this year could be very similar to last year for Texas. I think Arch buys them an awful lot of grace, but this can't keep happening, Ari.
Yeah, I mean, put the quote back up that you had up there. I want to talk about that.
Nope, not that one. I know which one you're talking about. Quinn Ewers.
We can do that one. The Quinn Ewers one. While you're Hunter working
Bach
on
it. Asks, how much can we take away from these games with Quinn Ewers out?
What year are we in the Sark era? This is year 2, right?
Year 2, yeah.
this is a valid point, because what we saw out of Quinn Ewers, you know how I am with him.
Yeah, it was briefly against Alabama, and we saw a full very game good. Against Louisiana Monroe.
But you can't – this isn't a good thing if you're a Texas fan. Where would we be right now if our freshman quarterback that we weren't sure was actually going to start this year was playing the game? Like, they have to be further along on the build than this, because we thought Hudson Card was going to be the starter for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if this is a acceptable excuse.
Right, and also – they were not terrible under Tom Herman. It's not like he inherited a dumpster fire. Like, they had some talent. There was some money in the banana stand. So, yeah, this can't keep happening. They can't keep losing games like this. And that is, I mean, that's got to be the biggest frustration for Texas fans, is this, whether it's the end of the Mack Brown era, the Charlie Strong era, the Tom Herman era, and now the Sark era. They keep losing to teams they're supposed to beat.
The saddest thing about
when they have them beat
is that when they were on the verge of beating Alabama, I took that as a signal or a sign or a symptom potentially that they were past this. They're past losing these games.
We made fun of good losses when we did the Ass Clown rankings the other day. Like, for those of you who maybe didn't get the joke, we were making fun of the idea of liking good. Like, good losses don't mean anything. They really don't. Because at the end of the day, you still didn't get it done.
Yeah, and that was a good loss, but this is a bad one. And they're not supposed to have bad ones anymore. So, you know, next year, I mean, it's like, I don't know. Like, next year when Arch is on campus and they do it again, like, I mean, at what point does the seat start getting hot?
Well, that's the part I wonder about. Like, how many of these does it take for Arch to go, you know what? Georgia wanted me. Why don't I just call them back?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that, you know, the Manning family is pretty calculated and understands what they're doing.
Oh,
and
sure.
This isn't new, you know.
Right.
The thing that
this
I think is...
I'm going to be the one who brings it back.
Play. So I don't know if I'm on alert of, like, flipping to another school before
he signs.
I think
it would take a lot more than this. I'm just saying, how many of these does it take for that to be a possibility?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that this isn't a thing. Like, last year when Texas lost games like this, we were joking about it on the podcast and ha ha ha, Texas is back. I was doing this, you were doing this. And just like, it's just regular now. And I'm not even reacting to it anymore. It's sad.
It's just sad. It really is.
Yeah.
Let's stay in the state, but different conference. The game you were at.
Oh.
Because
it's going to be like, oh, okay.
Arkansas is in. I mean, we saw some just crazy stuff today. Arkansas is in control of that game. They are going in to make it 21-7. KJ Jefferson goes up the middle, reaches the ball over, gets it poked out. I can't remember who got it at first, but then he hands it to Damani Richardson.
Yes.
For the touchdown. I mean, it was wild. And that turned everything. That changed everything. Changed the whole tone of the game. Arkansas did.
Tyreek Campbell recovered it.
That's right. Arkansas did get back into a groove offensively very late, but it was too late and they missed that field goal. That was, I mean, we are basically an inch away from, oh God, you're stuck with Jimbo Fisher for how many more years? And now we're like, well, if they beat Mississippi State and Alabama looks as human as they looked against Texas, I don't know.
Well, Jimbo Fisher's in that safe place, right?
Still, he's
in
the, fine.
He's fine.
Yeah.
Like, they're stuck with the guy.
But we were going to be talking about how stuck they were with
him. Did you see the column I wrote? Do you know what I wrote about, or do you want to talk about it?
I have not seen it because it had not posted because you were driving home. So
Tyree, my column, Texas A&M didn't save its season, but it could have saved its future. Of kind of just like my whole takeaway from that game was when they were down 14-0, I was making Iowa offense jokes. You know, they had 28 yards. They had 28 yards of offense in the first quarter and zero first downs. So it was warranted. And this isn't like it's the first week that this happened. And, you know, this is something that's going to rear its ugly head again on bigger stages than this.
I will say, though, I was very impressed with the way Max Johnson collected himself. And
yeah.
I hate that they lost Anaya Smith. But Max Johnson looked, in the middle two quarters of that game, look like what you wanted him to look like. By the way, he can move pretty well. And just some of the stuff he did, there were a couple of times when Arkansas threw the kitchen sink at him. There, one of the touchdowns that he threw, Arkansas threw the kitchen sink at him. It's one of those you know you're going to get hit, but you also know somebody's either open or one-on-one, and that's who he found, and he put it where it needed to be. I think they can be a competent offense, which is not something I would have said in the first quarter, but I think there are the seeds of a competent offense there.
I feel like every single receiver that got a pass for A&M this game was like sliding on their knees. Like I don't know that it was.
He wasn't hitting them all in stride.
No, but, I mean, people were catching passes. They just weren't running.
No, they were playing the team that leads the nation in sacks. So,
and they were also playing the worst secondary in the nation.
This is true. This is true.
Well, here's my take on this. Is kind of like piggybacking off of your thought from 2 weeks ago. This team lost to App State last week. You can't ever remove that blemish. That's a scar on a resume.
Right.
This team was never supposed to win the SEC this year, right?
If this team goes 9-3, everything's hunky-dory.
Everything's fine, right? So in the beginning of the game, and it was 14-0, and their offense was terrible, you kind of got that feeling like, hey, this is going to get bad, you know? And I thought they were going to lose, and maybe by a lot, because it didn't look like they could get a first down. And then that 97-yard fumble return that had a lateral in it or a handoff, and it was really cool and kind of changed the entire game. But my column basically, Andy, was that this season was never supposed to be a season of grandeur. But what we couldn't have happen, if you're an A&M fan, is this team turning this game or this season and this program turning into a dumpster fire.
Right.
Where you have five-star freshmen retweeting criticisms of the coach. You've got other freshmen suspended. You lose four games because your offense can't get a first down. Your skill on your team gets frustrated and wants to transfer, which is the joke that everybody made last year when they signed their class. People stop believing in the future. The build kind of goes off track, and then all of a sudden everything kind of goes off the rails. I think what this win did was give them a second quote-unquote good win after a disastrous loss. It keeps people locked in. It gives you hope, and it stops people from quitting on the team and quitting on the program and quitting on the vision. So that was what my column was about, of just like they did this. When you wrote that they could have gone 1-5 after that loss to App State, the fact that they won their next two games, regardless of what happens in the next two, kind of helps the season from getting completely derailed.
2-2 in this stretch. You may finish 8-4. Highly possible you finish 8-4 if they lose the next two. But I now have much more confidence that they can win the next one.
Yeah, and the whole point of this is like,
I'm not particularly confident that they can beat Alabama still. But
they got to keep their talent on the team. That's the first thing.
If you come out of the Alabama game with two losses, you're fine.
Yes.
You're fine.
Yes. And hopefully the Alabama game for their sake isn't 59-0.
Right.
And it could be, but if it isn't, and they have two losses and they play a respectable game in Tuscaloosa, you have people on the team, you keep those players on your team, you recruit your ass off for 23, you expand on what you did last year, and you continue to build. Like Evan Stewart, Ram FTW in the comments, that had a good game. He also got frustrated in the first quarter because he was wide open and Max Johnson threw it at his cleats. So like it's in his one touchdown that he did catch, he was sliding like he was trying to steal third base.
Well, that would Max Johnson was being hit by two people.
Yes, and I'm not saying that every single throw was Max Johnson's fault, so don't take it that way. My point is that this guy wants to catch the ball in space and make something happen, and every single time the ball comes to him, it's never at the numbers.
Well, they are going to have to figure that out, and now without Anaya Smith,
and there's already a hint of frustration last week, Andy.
Oh, yeah?
So, like, you're already starting to sense it, and it kind of felt like this was a very important week for A&M, because if they would have lost this game 41-10, then all of a sudden, all those emotions bubble. Could you imagine? Yeah. And it felt like it was going to be one of those games for a while. And I'll give them credit. They won the game. So that was a big win for them, I think.
I think you're right. Let's talk about what probably was the most surprising result of Saturday. Well, James Madison beating Appalachian State in Boone might have been the most surprising. But I don't think that one resonated quite as much as this one. Middle Tennessee, 45, Miami, 31. It never really got much closer than that. It would basically, Miami would get within a couple touchdowns, and then Middle Tennessee would extend the lead. And it was with huge plays. Like, You had a 71-yard touchdown pass. You had a 69-yard touchdown pass. You had a 98-yard touchdown pass. Chase Cunningham attempted 25 passes. He was 16 of 25. So he attempted 25 passes, had 408 passing yards. That is a 16.3 yards per attempt average. Miami's defense got torched. Let's hear from Middle Tennessee State coach Rick Stockstill, former Florida State quarterback also. So, you know, he took a lot of joy in this particular win.
Fantastic win. Extremely proud. Happy for our players. It's always fun to do stuff that nobody thinks you can do. And coming down here, 26-point dogs and kicking their butt like we did, because it was a butt kicking. There was no fluke to this. And just really proud of our team, the toughness that we played with. We were the tougher team here tonight.
That is, there are no lies there. No lies whatsoever. Miami looked awful.
Andy, I love when a coach references the spread.
Exactly. I figured that would catch your ear.
Well, the thing that we're not discussing, or we haven't discussed yet, is that 98-yard touchdown pass came after they stuffed Miami four consecutive times at the 1-yard line.
Yes.
You know, and that, to me, like, this, it's one thing to come off of a loss and you've got your heads hang low, you're sleepwalking a little bit, and you get upset at the last second. They got their ass kicked.
Yes. It was embarrassing. They pulled Tyler Van Dyke in the middle of the third quarter, went with Jake Garcia. He leads them on a touchdown drive, the first drive, but then again, the defense couldn't hold him at all. So, yeah, the honeymoon is over for Mario Cristobal. He's in his first year. You can always pawn it off on what you inherited, but that was bad. And it was interesting to see all the people from Oregon piling on. Like, oh, we told you. You're still pretty mad when he left.
Yeah, and it doesn't make you feel better. But maybe it makes you feel a little bit better. You know,
well,
the whole thing with these first-year losses, too, it's just like the question of Mario Cristobal as a game manager has always been there. Everybody that – I mean, Oregon fans were screaming it before he got fired in Fairbanks.
They were screaming it when he was winning the Pac-12.
Yeah, like I mean, I've listened to enough Dan Rubenstein to know what's up with the Oregon fans. And so it's not, I don't think it's sour grapes, but I do think, though, that the whole idea of what Miami is supposed to be is something that you have to build. And I don't know if I'm overreacting, like the honeymoon's over, or, you know, he sucks as a coach or whatever. You know, if this loss happens in year three, then I think that's much different than it happening now. But still, Miami's roster is constructed in a way that they shouldn't be getting their butts kicked by a team like this. You know, it's one thing to lose or have a really bad game. It's another thing to, you know, get slapped around by a team that lost to James Madison 44-7.
Yeah. And this is just wild. I mean, I don't know what you do next, but you better figure something out, because the schedule gets harder. The offenses that they've got to play this year are fairly competent. Now, they have an ACC schedule, but you got North Carolina. If you can't stop Middle Tennessee, North Carolina is going to score so many points on you. Now, if you watch the Notre Dame game, you're going to score a ton of points on North Carolina as well.
What's the over-under on that game going to be?
They've got a bye week. Miami does. What's that?
What's the over-under on the Miami-North Carolina game going to be? 107?
Probably, yeah. Well, so Miami's got an open date this week, so they can figure some stuff out. But yeah, I mean, I'm really not worried about Miami's offense, because if you saw Notre Dame's offense against Cal or against Marshall...
Is Jake Garcia's team now, though? Or like, what? How do you read that?
That's a good question. I think... We'll find out. I mean, they have 2 weeks to decide how they want to handle this.
Imagine if I would have told you that Tyler Van Dyke was going to get benched in the third quarter of the Middle Tennessee State game a month ago.
I would have not believed you, because he was so sharp last year, and it felt like, oh, this guy's going to get better, and they've got that. They have other pieces they need to work on, but they've got that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Jake Garcia, to your usual point, was a highly decorated quarterback recruit. So maybe he's the guy going forward. We'll see.
I mean, and the fact that he came in and let a touchdown drive right off the bat, I think is a good sign too. It kind of seems like that's like how you pass the torch naturally. And now Miami's lost two games in a row. They're 2-2. You know, I know that they haven't lost a game in the ACC yet, so it's not fair to say that their season's going in the wrong direction. But, you know, if you wanted to kind of start making the change and turning the page, that this kind of seems like a natural time to do that.
But that's not necessarily a guy that you wanted to turn the page from.
No, I know.
But he struggled against Texas A&M. He struggled against Middle Tennessee. So we'll see what happens. But I will say North Carolina is the cure for a sick offense. Because Notre Dame looked dominant on offense on Saturday.
And I was yelling at you on text over in the beginning of the game, like, I cannot believe how average Notre Dame skill position players are. And the next thing you know, they're just scoring 80-yard touchdowns.
How do you not cover Michael Meyer?
Like, yeah, I know.
That's the only guy you should cover.
Yeah, I mean, that was a butt whooping. And, you know, they just don't tackle, man.
Yeah, it was frustrating to watch, and the you know, you see the shots of Gene Chizik in the box, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, how do they go into halftime, and they come out, and right off the bat, somebody thinks they're playing zone when they're playing man or vice versa, and Notre Dame scores on a coverage bust. Like, right off the bat, what were you talking about at halftime?
Yeah, no, it was rough. And I kind of just feel like this was a inevitability for North Carolina at some point. And I wasn't sure if, you know, Notre Dame's offense was dynamic enough to light it up the way that they did. But if it wasn't Notre Dame, it was going to be somebody else, because this defense has been shaky is a nice term for what they've been this year.
And Drake May could not carry them completely. And look, Notre Dame's defense is pretty good. They've got a very good pass rush, and they forced some turnovers. And, you know, I think it's tough for North Carolina's offense to have to be perfect every time, to have to score every single possession. It's not a way you want to live.
Yeah, they got a 32 points, and if you would have told me before the game that they scored 32, I might have said they would win. But then what we know about North Carolina now, it's like 45. It's like their defense stinks. So, you know, it's just – if you come – I think that the thing about college football in general is that we are all so – in love with offense. You know what I mean? Like, even with me and my USC love, like, you know, they've got all these awesome dynamic skill position players, or quarterbacks awesome. And it's just like, you just kind of find a way to dismiss defensive deficiencies and worries. And it's just like, if you don't have a good defense, you're going to lose. Like, it doesn't have to be great. It doesn't have to be exceptional. It just has to be pretty good. And I think that you could say that North Carolina's defense is awful.
I don't think you're exaggerating there. I think you're exactly right. It's not getting any better. And I can't imagine Mac firing Gene Chizik, who he just hired in the middle of the season. But it's ugly. Boise State fired their OC. So it happens.
I mean,
sometimes.
It's schematic and it's toughness. It's both.
Yeah. Which also comes down to how you practice. So that's coaching too. We'll be right back after these words. Let's move one state west from North Carolina. The Vols. They did it. They did it. They hosted game day. It was a beautiful sight along the banks of the Tennessee River. Everybody was having a good time. And then the game starts. Anthony Richardson's playing with a little bit of confidence. You're like, ooh, uh-oh. Florida might still have that mental whammy on them. But Hendon Hooker. One-time Andy Staples Show guest, Hendon Hooker. And if you haven't listened to that interview, go back and listen to it. He's fantastic. But he was awesome on Saturday.
If I told you that
is what you want in your quarterback. When you want to say, I need my quarterback to be able to take over a game. That is what you want.
We should have a segment next week of, and I don't know if we have enough time tonight to get into it, but we should have a segment next week of, are they good? Because there's a few teams on there of just like, are they good?
I don't know.
Kansas, Tennessee, are they good?
Right. And this is degrees. This is economies of scale. Like, Tennessee, are they good means can they be competitive against Georgia?
Yeah.
It's a little bit, or Alabama. Like, that's a different kind of good.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's, I mean, you know, everything's relative. But are they good in comparison to what they should be or what they could be. You know, I think that's interesting.
I think they're right where they need to be.
Blindfolded you from a television and said Anthony Richardson would throw for 450 yards and two touchdowns and rush for 62 and two others. Right. How much money would you have bet that Florida wins that game? Because I would have put the deed of my house on it.
Oh, absolutely. Which is why I said they would cover. And they did. And the backdoor cover
was wide open.
Well, the backdoor cover was one thing, but it was what happened after the back. Like, they hit the backdoor cover and then the onside kick and the crowd shots in Neyland Stadium. That's where that mental thing comes in.
Like, it's like, oh boy, it's happening.
Those people were puckered. And I mean, the chances of them getting an onside kick. By the way, that
onside kick recovery was one of the most athletic plays I've ever seen.
It was beautiful. Yeah. But the chances of Florida getting an onside kick, and I think they had 17 seconds, like, and scoring a touchdown in those 17 seconds. Oh, we do need to talk about this because I got asked a bunch about this today. Billy Napier going for two after the first touchdown, which left them down 11 instead of down 10 if they kicked the extra point. And then going for two again when they got it within five. It's an analytics thing. You see it in the NFL a lot. It's basically you go for two early enough, and if you get it, then you can put yourself in a position to win in regulation. You take yourself off the tie game overtime track. And if you don't get it, then you can go for two again and make up those points. They didn't get it either time, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's from the school of some advanced analytic bullshit. That's what I call it.
Well, it is, and you see it in the NFL all the time. Like, in the NFL, if there's like less than 8 minutes left and you're down 14, you're supposed to go for two when you score. So, I don't know. I don't know what the numbers say on that.
You know, it's so funny because in college football, especially, if you miss an extra point, like, I feel like it always comes back to haunt. Like, I was like, even in the game I covered tonight.
Yes.
It's like A&M missed an extra point, and they almost lost the game because of it, you know?
Yep.
And it's just like, I don't know if I would ever be in a position where I feel like I need to put myself off track and be down by eight because that one point can be huge. And the other thing, too, is like, if you really want to win the game in regulation, then go for two at the end. Like, you don't have to do it right away. I've never understood the idea of trying to make up points too soon because all you do is take yourself out of the game sooner rather than later. When the school of thought should be, in my opinion, is keep your team in the game for as long as you possibly can so they keep fighting hard instead of trying to go for two and then no earlier, because I feel like that could be demoralizing.
Yeah, it's purely numbers driven because I've heard the NFL coaches explain it too. And I think I'm more with you because of how it affects the team and it can demoralize you.
Because it does kind of like it does. And, you know, when you're watching it as a fan, it just kind of gnaw at you, doesn't it? When you score a touchdown and you don't get the extra point.
A little bit.
And I feel like if you score a touchdown and you go for two and miss it, then the ensuing kickoff, the other team feels good about themselves. And that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it. Like, stats are stats and stats are beautiful, but I also think they're stupid sometimes. And I do think that just because something is happening in the NFL doesn't necessarily mean that it translates well to the college game either. I'm not a coach. I don't get paid $8 million a year to do these things. But it's just like you look at it and you just go, why?
Well, it does fit Billy Napier's sort of whole motif. Like, he goes for it on fourth down. That's it.
Yeah,
they're going to be aggressive. And so far, it hasn't really... Well, I take that back. It worked in the Utah game. It did not work in the Kentucky game. It did not necessarily work in the... Well, they converted some fourth downs in the Tennessee game, too.
Quarterback kept to go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have Anthony Richardson on your team, he's like the perfect go-for-it quarterback. And I just like, I don't know what it is, but getting a two-point conversion is just so freaking hard.
Yeah.
It just is. It's a hard thing to do.
We had a lot to still discuss. Sorry.
This might be a 2-hour podcast, but I'm okay with it.
It very well might. And you know, by all means, if you need to make breakfast slowly, please do. But this is that Auburn Missouri game. Like, it feels like a dream now because it was so long ago. It was in the
that was in today.
The, well, not the day not we're anymore, we're currently I guess, yeah. in, but I still can't believe it happened. So Auburn gained, I think, 217 total yards and won. Missouri missed a chip shot field goal with a kicker that looks like he was on the old Andy Staples diet plan.
He looks like me. Just say it.
I said it already in our other video, so I don't need to say it again. Who doesn't take warm-up kicks, apparently. And look, I'm not going to kill him because he missed this one because he doesn't take warm-up kicks. Like, it's just...
swing the leg around a little bit.
You think.
Swing the leg and get the stinky leg out there.
And then, but then, after Auburn kicks a field goal in overtime, Missouri has a chance to run the ball in or go out on the one and then punch it in from the one to win the game. And they fumble through the back of the end zone or fumble into the end zone and it's recovered for a touchback.
Has anybody ever really considered that Missouri sounds a lot like misery?
Well, it was interesting. So I saw some comments earlier in the show from some Missouri fans saying, one said it was the most painful loss in Missouri history, which... very hard for me to believe considering the Colorado fifth down game is part of Missouri history and the flea kicker against Nebraska where the guy basically kicked the ball up to his teammate who caught it to win the game happened in Missouri history.
I think it might be the most annoying.
It's the dumbest. It might be the dumbest loss in the history of college football. Well, okay. The 2019 Egg Bowl might be the dumbest loss in the history of college football. That's the
most entertaining, too.
Elijah Moore pretending to pee on the goalpost in homage to DK Metcalf, by the way. And then that backs them up. They miss the extra point, blah, blah. But now, the 2019 Egg Bowl, interestingly enough, a game that really, if you break it down, and in fact, our Bruce Feldman and Max Olson did break it down, got both staffs fired. Yeah. This might be one of those games
and then
change
the entire course of college football forever.
Yes.
Just don't reach for the goalpost or for the pylon anymore or the end zone. Just don't do it.
Well,
Arkansas lost because they did it too. And they happened in the second quarter, but
have policies against it for a reason.
I mean, what about KJ Jefferson jumping up from the three and extending the ball like that? I mean,
like he wasn't going to get it to the goal line.
You know, you just all you're doing is exposing the ball and palming the ball is just, you know, and I get it too. It's just like he scores there, no one ever thinks about it again. But it's just, man, he just dropped the ball. Nobody even touched him into the end zone and they lost because of it.
It's so brutal. And if he just goes out of bounds, they'll punch it in from the one.
And we joked about it too. It's just like Brian Harsin might get to keep his job for another week because the teenager has slippery fingers.
That's basically it. And look, I don't think anything that happened on Saturday suggests that Brian Harsin should keep his job any longer. And Listen, I feel like we have to qualify this every time, but I'll do it every time. What happened to him in January was despicable. Them trying to cook up a reason to fire him without paying his buyout was despicable. Them spreading rumors about him was despicable. Doing a sham investigation of him was despicable. All of it was despicable. That said, he disqualified himself from that job his first year when he decided not to attempt to engage Nick Saban or Kirby Smart on the recruiting trail.
Yep.
He declared he did not want to be Auburn's coach. So it's a charade. It needs to end. Nothing that happened Saturday changed that. Mm-hmm. Whether they beat LSU or get crushed by LSU isn't going to change it either. They're going to lose to Georgia. I'm assuming that's when it happens, is after Georgia.
Well, especially if it's 58-0.
Yes.
I have no idea how that team's going to score.
It will be if they play like that. Because they couldn't throw the ball. Like, they could not throw the ball, and Missouri was putting 8-9 guys in the box every play. And there was nothing that Auburn could do about it.
Win or lose, Andy, the product on the field is the product on the field. The result of the game doesn't take away from it. And I know they won, but you're not looking at that game if you're an Auburn fan and go, yeah, you know what? Maybe we should keep chugging along with this guy. You know, it's just the writing's on the wall, and I think the only thing that's left for the administration to do if they have any sense about them, and sometimes I wonder if they do. You got a few new people in there to maybe clean things up a little bit, but they just have to decide when the best time to do it is and then do it. You said the quote earlier. I don't know who said the quote. You can tell me, but what has to be done eventually has to be done now.
Yeah. So Florida athletic director, longtime athletic director, Jeremy Foley said it once when he was firing, I think, a tennis coach. And I believe it's actually a Henry Kissinger quote, but it's exactly right. No one is served by just stretching this out any longer than it needs to be. You know he's not going to be your coach next year, so just let that go and move on. You've got some ex-Auburn players on the staff. Make one of them the interim with Zach Etheridge or Carnell Williams. Make them the interim and just get this season over with and move on to whatever your future is going to be. So I hope they do that. Now, let's stick in the SEC because that Georgia game. Now, I wrote about Kent State earlier in the week where, we talked about how Kent State is playing three Power Five bye games, how ugly that is. And I think they're getting $5.2 million to play Washington, Oklahoma, and Georgia. And it really hamstrings them going into MAC play. But they played their butts off in Athens, and they made Georgia look somewhat mortal.
And Kent is the type of team that'll score 55, points if you let them. Regularly. Yeah. In the MAC. So, the spread was 45 in this game. And, you kind of just get the feeling sometimes that Georgia's going to be winning 35-0 early in the second quarter. And, that's just not what it was. Brock Bowers, by the way, come on. 75-yard touchdown run on the first play of the game. That guy's an animal. But it's just kind of one of those games that you don't really see much from the Georgia the last few years, which is sleepwalking, don't want to be here type of game. I don't know how much analysis you can really.
No, I think those two words those two phrases are the perfect analysis of the game. They didn't want to be there. They were going through the motions. They did win the game. That is about all you can say about it. Now they got Missouri and Auburn coming up. After what we've seen them do to Oregon and South Carolina, I expect them to do something more like that.
Yeah, you don't want any of those games. You don't want to be here game.
Yeah.
Because that means that the team is capable of letting their foot off the gas. And, in that conference, that's not what you'd ever want to do. And that's usually when teams end up getting upset. It's like, even Alabama to a certain extent kind of had their heads up their butts when they were playing Texas and they almost lost that game. You got to be playing like you're playing in the playoff every week. And that's a really hard thing to do if you're a coach. But, the fact that Georgia just didn't play that well is, I don't know if there's even much more to say about it than, well, it happens,
Yeah. Well, okay. Sticking in the South with perennial playoff contenders, Clemson survived Wake Forest. They go to Winston-Salem. They survive in double overtime. Sam Hartman throws for 6 touchdown passes. DJ Uiagalelei throws, I think, the best 2 passes of his career, or the 2 touchdown passes in overtime. I still think at some point they may try to make it because neither defense was stopping anybody. I think they're going to run into a team at some point where they can't score at will. They can't run that jump ball offense and expect that to keep working. And they're going to have to try something different. Now, I don't know if that...
They could lose next week, Andy.
Right. Is that NC State next week? Is it Florida State in a few weeks? It does feel like that could...
Both what about Florida State sneaky 4-0, huh?
I don't even think it's sneaky. They bombed Boston College on Saturday. This is the most confident and competent Florida State has looked in years.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to learn everything we need to know about them in the next 3 weeks. They have Wake Forest. They have NC State. They have Clemson.
Yeah. 2-1 possible?
Oh, man. If they're 2-1 in that stretch... That's a pretty good team. Like that you are looking at a very good season if they come out of that 2-1.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few, I don't know if we want to put a bow on the Clemson thing, but there's a few teams out there that are sneaky. Let's watch them, and we joked about Kansas. Maybe that might be one, but
Syracuse gutted it out against Virginia on Friday.
Syracuse won.
They're undefeated, but I think are they good? When we do that segment,
yeah,
I don't know if that's how we're.
There's a bunch of people in the chat who were, but Minnesota.
Well, we're done. We're going to talk about them.
Yeah.
So let's Clemson. We're going to find out. We'll find out.
We'll talk about it next week. Yeah.
But let's let us move to the Big Ten, because Minnesota beat the ever-loving bejesus out of Michigan State. I don't remember. Now, the last time I remember getting Michigan State getting that dominated was the Cotton Bowl against Alabama. And before that, the Citrus Bowl against Alabama.
Yeah.
But Minnesota came and just thumped them. And all of the conversation after the game, of course, was about, you just gave Mel Tucker $95 million, and this is what you got. But how about the Gophers? They look awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at their schedule, too, there isn't a single game on that schedule that they can't win.
Oh, no. That's what Penn State is probably the toughest game remaining on that schedule. And the other thing about them that is interesting is they are designed to win that division. Like, they are designed to beat the teams that they have to beat in that division. I'm imagining them matching up against Iowa, imagining them matching up against Wisconsin.
And Nebraska's not even one to think about.
Well, that's... are we sure that they just stink?
I think they stink, yeah.
Okay. Because I think Ohio State may have flipped a switch.
Ohio State's really good. I mean, I mean, they've lost two out of the last three games. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
This isn't the Wisconsin team that you're used to seeing.
No, there's something missing there, and they ran well, but you know, part of that was a 75-yard touchdown run with the game well in hand. They were never in it against Ohio State. That Ohio State offense is just brutal. They just destroy people. It is the exact opposite of the Iowa offense. It is a beautiful thing to watch.
And the scariest thing about it, too, is that their best receiver hasn't been playing.
I know.
Like, their best player, maybe. I mean, you can make the case that Jackson Smith-Njigba is better at receiver than Stroud is at quarterback. You might go crazy, but that's a discussion, you know. But I do think that, you know, if you want to go a little bit deeper into this Wisconsin discussion, that it's very alarming that Graham Mertz has not progressed at all.
At all. He averaged 4.7 yards per attempt in that game. He was 11 of 20 for 94 yards with a touchdown and a pick. It's shocking that they are as incompetent on offense as they've looked this year.
Yeah.
And so I keep getting these questions. I was on the radio the other day and got asked, you know, at what point do you kindly usher Paul Chryst into retirement? And he's not that old. Like, you wouldn't, I don't even know if you'd do that, but you've got Jim Leonard sitting there and you think, okay, maybe he's the next head coach. I don't think if you're Wisconsin, you make any kind of drastic change, because I think that identity still works, but I'm just not sure.
I mean, the whole thing with Wisconsin has always been that you have a coach that understands the identity and can lean into it. But if they're not running the ball, and you know, this isn't the Wisconsin identity, that they're kind of veering from it a little bit. I think that's alarming.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And listen, there's a lot of existential dread right now in the Big Ten, because what if you're a Michigan State fan today? What are you thinking?
I can't believe we keep getting blown out since we gave our coach guaranteed $95 million contract.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not just losing, getting destroyed.
Yeah.
I saw a stat that I wish I'd...
I saw it too, and I've been trying to find it for the past 5 minutes.
That Mel Tucker has, I believe his losses are all by 11 or more, but he's 5-0 in one score games.
Yeah, that was, I think Chris Vanini tweeted it. I was trying to find it, but that's about right. If it's not right on, it's something like that.
When they have lost, they have lost badly.
Yes.
In his tenure.
So, you know, and that's like guaranteed contracts. I mean, it's like, is that what you have to do that to make sure that, you know, you can keep your guy around when he shows signs of life? But boy, did he got that fast, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, and it doesn't really mesh well with this recruiting strategy they're doing. You can't get your ass kicked every time you play a good team.
No.
And then get a 5-star offensive lineman from Massachusetts to want to go there.
Exactly. And the thing is, I remember I was going through the Twitter today, and I saw some recruits saying, I'm in East Lansing today. And I was like, oh God.
Oh boy.
Well, you're not going. You're not signing there. So
yeah, no, it's kind of a mess right now.
So I have another Big Ten question for you. I kind of think Michigan and Maryland are both kind of good.
Yeah. You know, I was wrong and I thought I was going to be right, but I always said, you know, when Maryland loses, they lose too. Like, that was a Maryland thing. And it's like, if you watched the first 5 seconds of that game, I mean, the return man, the ball hit off his face mask, Michigan recovers it, and one offensive play later, they're in the end zone. It's like, oh boy.
But then Maryland
69-0.
Yeah. Maryland is very much in the game in the third and fourth quarters. And Michigan put it away, but I thought Michigan did a great job. The touchdown right before the half was brilliant. Harbaugh has always been a good analytics guy. Like, he always seems to make the right go for it call on fourth and short. And this is one of those where it was fourth and short. And for most teams, you would see them go to, you know, after the third down play, the team's getting up, all the offensive linemen, the quarterback are like pointing forward. They're yelling to the sideline, let us go for it. Let us go for it. There was no talk. There was no discussion. They just got down, lined up, and ran a play, and ended up scoring a touchdown on it. Blake Corum ended up running for a touchdown. And they took advantage of Maryland not being prepared, but that was also them having a plan. If you're at that down a distance at that yard marker, you're going to go for it. And it was impressive. So,
you know, it's like BSE just said in the chat here, he goes, Maryland has some dudes, you know, and they always have dudes.
Yeah.
You know,
Rakeem Jarrett, Jacob Copeland was a big time recruit. The guy who transferred from Florida.
And that hasn't stopped them from getting completely demolished. And the craziest thing about this game was that Maryland, for a while there, even though they were kind of down in the second half, you know, could have won that game. It wouldn't have been a crazy result change if that happened. And then you look at their schedule: Michigan State, Purdue, Indiana, Northwestern, Wisconsin. They don't play Penn State till November 12th. And it's like, that's the kind of thing that's just like, and I'm not giving Mike Locksley a hard time here because I know how hard that is. But like, if they could have won that game somehow, you know, Maryland could have maybe made it into November as an exciting team we were talking about. And it kind of stinks that they didn't get it done. But like, also too, it's just like, you wonder, this was the first team with a pulse that Michigan played, and they didn't look all that good either. So, you know, there's a lot.
Yeah.
This kind of felt like a week one matchup to me.
Michigan, Iowa, I feel like he's going to answer a lot of our questions. So
what's the over-under of that game? We're
going to talk about Iowa Rutgers anyway.
Yeah.
They hit the over.
Told you.
Vegas kept lowering the number, and it finally was low enough. 34. Yeah,
I will say this, and I tweeted about this while I was at the Texas A&M game. Two more defensive touchdowns, dude. Like, how do they keep scoring?
Because their defense is awesome.
I know, but like, it's kind of random too sometimes.
Right.
Scoring on defense is an art, but like, it also is just like, you kind of have to be in the right place at the right time sometimes.
And the one interception was like a Willie Mays basket catch, and then he turned around and ran it back, and then the other was a scoop and score.
It's unbelievable. Like, I mean, holy crap. And it just makes me think, if they just had, we've talked about this 100 times, but how about 101? If they even had a offense that even had
a championship pulse, caliber team,
they could play in the Big Ten championship game.
No, they did play in the Big Ten championship
game. No, I'm saying this year, it's just a waste.
They could win the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah. I mean, if their offense was like, if you gave Iowa Michigan's offense,
oh my God, they would destroy people.
Because, like, what would you think Michigan's offense is? Like a top 30 offense?
Yeah. Yeah, they would destroy people, because think about how hard it is for Iowa's defense being put in the positions it keeps getting put in.
Also, think about all the positions the offense will get to start in.
Exactly. Vaughn, who's one of our resident Iowa fans, at what point does it stop being funny and cute with Iowa? For us, never, because we don't care if they win or lose. So, but for you guys,
but if you, it's probably been a while. It's probably been not funny and cute for a long time. You know, it is kind of one of those things that I just can't look away from.
I'm just fascinated by it. I cannot wait for the Michigan-Iowa game, because I do think Michigan will score on them, and then we'll find out what Iowa's offense is. Now, Iowa had a couple of good drives against Rutgers. The offensive line was opening some holes. The backs were hitting them. It was like, okay, well, maybe they're turning a corner. But then we're going to find out when they play Michigan. So
Is that a sicko game? Or is that just a good game?
That's just a good game. That's not a sicko game.
What's a sicko game? Like a game. Was a sicko game.
James Madison, Appalachian State today was a sicko game.
But Rutgers, Iowa was also a sicko game.
It was absolutely a sicko game. We were talking about the punters and excited about the punters.
Scott wrote a feature about them.
I know. It was beautiful. It was so beautiful. We got to go back out west, Ari. Washington continues to roll. They killed Stanford.
We need to do this segment, Andy. This Are They Good segment, because you got Washington.
Yeah,
you got
Ole Miss. That's another one. Well, let's do that. Okay. Let's do that for Tuesday's show. You, me, and Scott will do Are They Good?
Yeah.
Are we stealing that from somebody?
I don't think so.
That feels like a solid verbal segment. That feels like a very entrenched solid verbal segment. So I have to call Dan and Ty and make sure we're not.
Yeah, I didn't take it from them. But if they did it, then we won't do it.
I think we're good. But I do want to go out west one more time. A game that just ended that was delayed briefly because someone flew a drone over the field.
Why do you think college, this crazy stuff happens in college football? Is it because there are so many games and there's more likelihood that dumb stuff happens?
Yes. Also because they take place in colleges. At colleges.
Yeah.
And people who are 18 to 22 are weird and do strange things. And that's why.
Well, you saw the thing about the Utah student that got arrested, right?
No.
Last week?
No.
Some student, female student, I think, like, got arrested for saying that if Utah lost last week that she was going to blow up uranium or something on campus.
Oh, God.
And, like, I guess there was, like, a plant on campus or something that was dangerous.
Oh, my gosh. That's awful.
It's just, like, this stuff never happens in any other realm of society. And it's just, like, I don't know. Just college football is a very strange. It's, like, it wasn't a real threat. It was just, like, yeah. I mean, I didn't mean to bring down the tone of the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it was just San Diego State. Okay. Yeah. Now that you've taken it to a dark place, let me bring it back to a more fun place. So, Washington beats Stanford. The Huskies keep rolling. Michael Penix Jr. We've talked about how excited we are for him because everybody watched him at Indiana. He had such great promise. 3 season-ending injuries in a row. And it was like, okay, when is he ever going to get a fair shake? Is he ever going to have a season where he can really show us what he can do? It's happening right now. And fortunately, it's happening during the NIL era, Ari. Ari, have you seen the t-shirts that you can now buy featuring Michael Penix Jr.? Big Penix Energy.
That's right.
It has basically the outline of Husky Stadium.
I had an idea of where that was headed, by the way.
Big Penix Energy t-shirt. It's a collaboration with Simply Seattle. These apparently dropped on Friday. This has got to be the hottest shirt in Seattle, right? I know the Mariners are good, but other than the Kraken,
I mean, I'd
sweaters,
wear that.
There is some
kind of
ordering that
joke about Big Penix Energy and the Kraken that you could like kind of mesh together, but we can save that for next week's show,
probably. Well, I'm just now I'm just thinking of the Lotto and Mariah Carey song, but. Oh, it is. That is a great use of NIL. That,
yes,
it makes me so happy that this is available now, and we get things like the DeCrolis Crawford commercial. You get Bryce Young in the Heisman House commercial. Have you seen the one where he's like, "I got a game"?
Yeah, like, I have.
Bryce Young is a very good actor. His DeCrolis
Crawford is the best one so far, in my opinion, though.
Which one?
The DeCrolis Crawford.
Oh yeah,
one.
Yeah. Without it, hey, well, have you seen the Stetson Bennett for the apartment complex?
No, I haven't seen that.
Where he's dressed up as a mailman and very kind of winking at the camera, breaking the fourth wall kind of thing going on there. And he's pretty, but Bryce Young is a legitimately talented actor. Like that Fansville commercial is hilarious.
It is, yeah. The Fansville commercials are all funny, I think.
Yes, that is the best show on TV. I love Fansville. I'm the first to admit it. Like, if you say that you want Larry Culpepper back, I know everything I need to know about you. We can't be friends.
I met Larry Culpepper though once.
I did too.
And it was funny because it was
Larry. The guy who plays Larry Culpepper is like Daniel Day-Lewis. He's a method actor. Like he never breaks character.
Well, it's funny you said that because he broke character while I was was around him, and I pointed at him and I said, "Don't break character." He says, "Where are you guys from?" I said, "Don't break character." And I pointed in his face, and we were all laughing about it.
Oh my God! No, see, those Fansville people, I eagerly look forward to the next installment. The people who write those commercials are clearly huge college football fans. Those are the only commercials that run during college football that are done by college football fans. Like those stupid Cheez-It commercials. I woke up feeling the cheesiest, coach. Please shoot that one into the sun. There's one commercial that plays Steppenwolf's Magic Carpet Ride over and over. I don't even know what it's for. It's a crappy ad because you've been running it for 3 years and I still don't know what it's for.
Yeah, so, you need to know what it's for.
And then,
which is rule number one. In the
exactly.
Whole
and yeah. But those Fansville commercials are perfect. If they could ever let me write a Fansville plot line, like
it could happen.
I have so many ideas.
I could see that happening for you, Andy.
We went very deep down.
Sam Bruce Smith. I love that Cheez-It commercial. You know, Sam Bruce Smith,
off.
Enjoy it, bud. You know, everybody can enjoy that. It's the small things in life. Just because Andy doesn't like it doesn't mean you can't.
It's terrible. The one with Marty Smith is slightly better.
There's someone and something for everyone, pal.
Well, listen, whoever does the Fansville commercials, if you need a guest writer, because, you know, we went deep down the Fansville rabbit hole week one because the fansplaining commercial, that's the mom and the dad is, you know, you've got the mom and the dad with the son who goes to Coastal, but the face paint guy who had a wife in season one and we haven't seen her in a while. Like, she gave birth to a baby in season one. Cause remember, the baby was a tech fan.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is apparently single now. I don't know if he's living on their couch or he's got something going on with Mrs. Fan. With Mrs. State Fan.
You're going to have to get... That's an investigative journalism piece that you were born to write, Andy.
I just want to be hired to the writing staff of the commercials. Like, if they offer me a job tomorrow, you're doing the show by yourself.
No, I'm coming with you. No matter what your next job is, I'm coming with.
We're going to be the writer's room of Fansville?
If you want to be a garbage man, I'm on the other side of the garbage truck with you.
Awesome. Love it. I think...
And I will say this.
We could probably pick up recycling bins. I think we'd be good at that.
I don't want like dirt on my hands. I can do water bottles. That when I go into public now in any college football setting, somebody is coming up to me and going, I love your show with Andy. I listen to it every week. And I want to say that, hey, I'm grateful for that.
Oh.
For you to be on the show, but also to the people who listen to this.
Oh, I love I love you guys. Ari's dad's dentist.
All you,
the random middle schooler at my kid's school that just will come up to my son and be like, dude, your dad was talking about this on the show. And my son's like, I don't listen to my dad.
I was dropping my daughter off at daycare and one of the other parents of one of the children in her class said, hey, are you and Andy putting a show out today? And, you know, I want to be his friend. I'm going to invite him over for a play date soon. If you're listening, Let's get that on the books.
There we go.
You know, somebody at the A&M game tonight came up and gave me a pizza place recommendation in Dallas. As I know, you know, it's all people. The interaction's been incredible. The show I can feel like touches a lot of people. And I just want, before we get, I mean, maybe it's 1:30 in the morning and I'm getting delirious, but it means a lot to me. And I love the direction that it's headed in.
Well, we're going to keep having fun. We got some good ideas for the next few weeks, including Ari's idea that we're definitely going to do on Tuesday's show, unless we forget, but probably going to do it. Are they good? Because we got a lot of teams to ask.
Yeah, I was just looking
at
the rankings, Andy. There's a ton.
Oh yeah, because the rankings don't mean squat right now.
No, I was looking at the rankings for records.
Oh yeah, I know.
Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. Clemson, yep.
Yes.
USC,
mm-hmm.
Kentucky,
yep.
Did Oklahoma State win today?
They were off.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Kansas,
Tennessee.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Penn State, mm-hmm. Ole Miss.
Yep.
Washington.
Yes.
It's a lot of teams.
Are they good? I can't grow a goatee to stroke,
I'm going to shave so my. This is. I got to shave.
All right. Ari, it's time to go to bed.
Thanks, man.
Thanks to all of you for hanging up with us and this is why we do this. I love that there's a bunch of people, our fellow, you're just our people.
They're our family, like, yeah.
Like, we are here at 2:30 in the morning Eastern time, and you're all here with us. And hopefully a bunch of you are cooking breakfast or walking your dogs to us. And this was a fun Saturday. There was all kinds of crazy stuff. Ari got to see a doink off the top of an upright, which just doesn't happen very often.
It felt good to be at a game, and I'm excited for more to come this year. BK is not listening, but BK, we covered a game tonight.
I blocked BK, so he's
BK
out.
Was BK stand for Burger King?
Might. That's, I mean, that's your favorite breakfast restaurant.
That's going to say, now, if speaking of cooking breakfast in BK, got a little croissant sandwich on the mind, you know?
There you go. Unless somebody gets fired on Sunday, we'll talk to you on Tuesday.